Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
We've been on this series of Living for Eternity, and today's session is entitled Moving into New Jerusalem. And we were just talking about the throne room in New Jerusalem in heaven. You could use either term, because New Jerusalem, or rather heaven, is called the New Jerusalem. It's a city. We're going to be looking a little bit more at that in some coming sessions. We've alluded to it. I recognize there's been some repetition in this series. I'm really trying to get some things ingrained into you. Like, I want for us to really have some solid ideas about eternity, about heaven, about who we are to God in eternity, how that all looks, how that relationship looks, what life looks like. I really want us to get in it, to get an understanding. So I want us to imagine today our future in this session and even the next couple, because they're going to be closely related. I want us to imagine the day that the moving trucks show up and we move from our current address into heaven. When we think about the idea of moving, I want us to get that, because it's a tactile idea. So many times we think about heaven and it just seems so ethereal and nebulous and we can't quite picture it. I want us to picture moving day. I want you to think about the last time you moved from one place to another, whether that was by, you know, cities, or you moved from one state to another, or you moved across town and moved from this apartment to this one, or house to house. I want you to think about what that is, because there's nothing more tactile, there's nothing more concrete in life than you're moving into your new place. There is a day coming when you are going to move into a real place that is your dwelling in the New Jerusalem, in a real city. We call it heaven. It's fine to call it heaven. The scripture does too. But I want us to think about it as a city called the New Jerusalem, because it's really easy to imagine moving from one city to another city. Sometimes it's a little difficult for us to make the connection point that we're moving from earth to heaven. But what if it's just moving from a city on earth to a city in the sky? Okay? Well, let's talk a little bit about this holy city, because it's awesome. It is beautiful and lofty. Look at Psalm 48, 1 through 2. So just imagine the city. You know, if any of you guys have moved from like a small town to a metropolitan area, you probably had some awe factor, you know, when you made that transition. If any of you have moved, you know, at any point or even visited any coastal cities or cities in, you know, in the mountains where it's just the topography, the landscape is just beautiful. It's kind of got some awe, you know, reality to it when you see those cities and the beauty all around. Well, there's nothing more beautiful than this city. Look at Psalm 48. Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. Where is he worthy of praise? Where is he right now? In the city of our God, his holy mountain. It's beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth. This is talking about actually when the New Jerusalem descends to above the earth and then on the earth in the millennium. This is the perspective of the people on the earth. They're seeing what is described as the city of our God, this beautiful, lofty city. That's going to be where you're going to live, this beautiful, lofty city. For those of us who have been stuck here in the flatlands of the Great Plains for the majority of our life, we are going to finally get to see and live in a glorious city that is high and lofty. It's described as the Lord's holy mountain. It is a beautiful reality. This city won't just be awesome. It will continually be made more awesome. One of the things I love about God, I mean, everything, but one of the things that I'm thinking about right now is his ability to take something that's already pretty cool and make it cooler. And then after that, figure out how to put bells and whistles on it and bling. Like, there's no end to his ability to upgrade and keep making things more beautiful, more incredible. Let me tell you one of the plans of God for the age to come, for the city that we're going to live in, of how he plans to make it cooler and cooler. He's actually going to use resources from the earth. He's going to bring them up into the New Jerusalem, and he's going to bedazzle the New Jerusalem with increased levels of glory and splendor that's brought from the earth. Let me read you a couple of verses. Revelation 22, 24 through 26, and then also Isaiah 60 says it similarly. The kings of the earth will bring their splendor into it. This is talking about the New Jerusalem. The glory and honor of the nations will be brought into it. So here's what's going on. Heaven is amazing, the New Jerusalem, and yet God is going to insist that the nations on the earth all bring tribute every year or whatever the timeline is, bring the best of their nation's goods. The best, it says, the splendor of the nation. So whatever nation has got diamonds is bringing diamonds. Whatever nation has got gold is bringing gold. Whatever nation has got the best textile, you know, mills and stuff is bringing the splendor, the best of the earth. Why does God want to collect earth cool stuff? Like, isn't heaven already amazing? He's going to use that. I'm telling you, it's not going to just be like, you know, sometimes when my children, they'll give me a beautiful drawing. And I am really grateful for those beautiful drawings. But I don't keep them forever. Sometimes not much longer than a day or two, sometimes. God is not going to, you know, just discard this splendor. He's going to utilize it. It's going to be trophies. It's going to be used to, you know, remodel or, you know, to accentuate or to decorate. He's going to use the splendor of the earth to make the city that we live in forever better and better and better. That is really cool. I really like the idea of living in a city that's going to already start off amazing and that's going to get better and better and better. And even the way that God's going to be tying in the glory, the splendor of earth and bringing it upstairs to decorate heaven. That's just so cool. You see, heaven is real. It's a real place that you can take things from the earth and put that thing in heaven and it still be a thing. It's substance. The Ark of the Covenant is in heaven. We're told in Revelation. Ark of the Covenant was an actual box, actually like had form to it. And it tells us in the book of Revelation that it's in heaven. It's because you can take stuff from earth and put it in heaven because it's a real place. Isaiah 60 said it similarly. Again, long before Revelation was written, your gates will always stand open. They will never be shut day or night so that men may bring you the wealth of the nations, their kings led in triumphal procession. Again, just this idea of the glory, the goods, the splendor of earth brought into heaven. All right, next. And we're going to spend more time on this point in a future session here in just a week or two or something. But I want us to see it. This is a very colorful. I'm talking about this. I'm giving you a little bit of an overview of this city we're moving into. It is enormous and it is colorful. It is glorious and beautiful in ways that we cannot even yet imagine. But the word does give us some information. We're going to be living in different colored floors of the great city. The word foundation is used. When you think about the foundation of a house only has one foundation. It's the bottom floor. It's the ground level of which you build everything upon. Well, the New Jerusalem doesn't have one foundation. It has 12. It's 1,400 miles high, and it has 12 foundations, 12 floors, 12 levels, 12 probably different atmospheres, 12 different realities, floor 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way up to 12. 12 floors, look what it says, the foundations of the city. City walls were decorated with every kind of precious stone. The first foundation was jasper. So the picture here that John's seeing from afar, he's looking at the New Jerusalem from outside at this point. And in the wall of the New Jerusalem, 1,400 miles tall, he can see 12 distinct levels, 12 distinct layers, because he can identify each one of them by color and precious stone type. He says the first foundation of the New Jerusalem was jasper. I saw it. The first floor is jasper. He said the second was sapphire. The third, chalcedony. And he goes on and he lists 12 distinct foundations. And he doesn't just say these were a bunch of gems that were scattered around the city. He said somehow God made floor one. He made the entire floor out of jasper. It's 1,400 miles wide, 1,400 miles long, and then the city is 1,400 miles tall, which allows for 12 different layers, 12 different floors. It's over 100 miles difference between one floor to the next if you just divide it evenly. 1,400 miles divided by 12. You tracking? That's a lot of city here, folks. And every one of these floors, every one of these layers in this enormous building is glorious and is purposeful and is made of brilliant gemstones. We're moving into the most glorious bling city that could possibly be imagined. I mean, it is so far outside of the realm of what we can imagine. Where did he get all that jasper? I think he's been mining from a lot of different planets. I mean, he's got a lot of gemstones up there. He has got an entire floor out of gemstone, each one of these gemstones. It's a ton of building material, like a ton. This is the city. I'm just saying, we're going to live there, and it's going to be amazing. We are never going to lack that awe, that just shock and awe of what we're getting to see and experience on the day-to-day. It is an absolutely unimaginable reality of the beauty and the glory of this 12-foundation enormous city. Friends, we are just not going to be bored. It's not going to happen. Not only is it glorious in all of its colors, but then you've got light at the very center. This is the city of light. Look at this. Let's look at some of these verses. Living in the city of light, Isaiah 24, 23, the moon will be abashed, the sun ashamed, for the Lord Almighty will reign on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem before its elders gloriously. Revelation 21, verse 11 tells us a little bit more about what's going on there. It shone with the glory of God. Its brilliance was like that of a very precious jewel. This stone, or this city, rather, with the 12 foundations, it is illumined by the glory of God in the city. So it's not just that the stones are beautiful, but a stone in the dark, a diamond in the dark, a ruby in the dark, you can't even see it. But you put brilliant glory light now illuminating that thing, there's going to be all sorts of reflections and ways that we've never even perceived rainbows. And I mean, what is it like when there's a rainbow in an atmosphere between, you know, chalcedony, sapphire, and chalcedony? It's like you got chalcedony here and sapphire here, and there's a rainbow in there where the light, I mean, how does that change what a rainbow's color? I don't know. It's going to be awesome. We are moving into the most glorious reality ever, and the light of God is going to be making this whole city brilliantly lit. Revelation 21, 23 through 24 says, the city does not need the sun or the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light, and the Lamb is its lamp, and the nations will walk by its light. This is God lighting. This isn't, no longer do we need electricity for this light. Doesn't need a big campfire. God is the source of the light for this whole city. And this is the city we're going to live in. I gave you a few more verses. I'm going to skip on. I think that this was really cool when Jesus said stuff like this in the Gospels. I'm going to give you Matthew 13, 44, and then also Matthew 13, 52. This is just Jesus frequently operating as Jehovah Sneaky. Sneaking in little phrases that nobody had any comprehension of what he was saying at the moment. It would take a lot of study and some cross-referencing and the fullness of his life and then the book of Revelation to be written later to help us to really interpret all these things. Because when he speaks in poems and he speaks in parables, and there's all these layers and glory. So that whatever Jesus says, you can take him at his face value, but there's also about 100 more layers of beauty and glory and revelation in anything that he says or anything in the Word. Look at these parables that Jesus said where he's speaking about the kingdom of heaven. He's talking about New Jerusalem. Look what he says. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure. Can you just imagine how little revelation the dudes had at this point in Jesus' journey and their work with him by Matthew chapter 13? They don't have revelation written yet. They don't have a full understanding of the passages in the Old Testament that tell us a little bit about the New Jerusalem. Jesus is just like, oh, you guys, it's going to be awesome. Heaven is like a treasure. He's like speaking at such a, like, you know, kindergarten level of understanding to them. It's like a treasure. He's like, yeah, listen, I'm going to really blow John's mind. John, bro, in a few years, you're going to about die when I show you what I'm talking about. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field when a man found it. he hid it again. And then his joy, he went and he sold all that he had and he bought the field. Just imagine what Jesus is saying here. What is this kingdom of heaven is like a treasure? This giant treasure city that we're going to get to live in. What is it worth? It's worth everything. Everything, whatever we could give, whatever we could lay down, it is worth it that we would get to experience that city. Matthew 13, a little bit later, just a few verses, another parable about the kingdom of heaven. He says, therefore every teacher of the law who has been instructed about the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house who brings out of his storeroom new treasures as well as old. Talking again about the kingdom of heaven and using this language to talk about the kingdom of heaven like a treasure. Old treasures, new treasures. I wonder even, I'll ask him when I get the chance, I wonder if this old treasures and new treasures, he was even thinking a little bit about this current state of heaven and also the state of heaven bringing in new treasures to it from the earth by the kings of the earth in the millennial age. New treasures and old treasures. I don't know. Maybe he was alluding to that. Here's my point. This is the city we're moving into, and it's amazing. It is unparalleled. It makes every problem we face in this life so dumb to complain about. Like if you put every big problem, I mean all of them, every horrible thing, you line them all up and then you stack that up and then you put next to it the giant glory box in the sky, okay? Your list of problems until you get perspective seems like this big until you do a zoom out and you realize that the city that we're talking about is 1,400 miles high and your list of problems like was about an inch tall. Inch versus 1,400 mile gem, okay? Wow. See, this is why we want to understand this stuff, that we could root ourselves in our future, our reality, in the reality of who we will be and what we will have for ages to come living in this city. Okay, well now we've talked about the city. Now let's talk about where we're going to live. The city of heaven is a dwelling place. It will be a dwelling for us. And it's also called the home of the righteous. I just want us to look at this real quick. 2 Peter 3 and then Proverbs 15. In keeping with his promise, we are looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth. The home of the righteous. This new heaven and new earth, there's coming a time where heaven and earth will actually be in connection to one another. Still distinct, but connected. A new reality. This is described as the home of the righteous. The home. Not just the inheritance. Inheritance is a big word, can mean a lot of things. Home. When someone says the word home, you know exactly what that word means. There's no mystery to it. The place where you live. So you could say the new heaven, new earth, the place where the righteous live. You could just change that out. Because that's what the home means. Wow. Proverbs 15. I love it when we see it in places we didn't expect it. Because it's just the language, it's the poetry of God to weave throughout the whole scripture little nuggets, little ideas, little points that help us to understand the whole storyline. So I doubt that Solomon was thinking about this when he wrote Proverbs 15. But the Holy Spirit was for sure thinking about it when Solomon wrote Proverbs 15. The house of the righteous contains great treasure, but the income of the wicked brings them trouble. I don't think Solomon knew what he was writing, but man, is that true. That is just straight up true. The house of the righteous, or if you go to 2 Peter 3, the home of the righteous, heaven, is filled with treasure. Yeah, it is, boy. Yeah, it is. That is a really filled with treasure house. Not only is it a house filled with treasure, but it's going to be our house. It's a place that we're going to live. John 14, 2, and then we'll look at John 14, 3 through 4, you know, right after that. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. John 14, 3 through 4 says, and if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you may also be where I am. You know the place where I am going. So this is... both of these verses, and it's all the same passage, This is a description of a real place that is in God's heart, that it already exists, and that Jesus is going there to prepare a place for us. This is really great. He calls it his Father's house. So I want you to now imagine, because God's capacities are a lot bigger than ours. So like sometimes I think about, you know, man, those millionaires that own like really, really big mansions, that's like a lot of dusting. Like that's a tremendous amount of yard work. And they're like, it's okay, we're just going to hire people. Well, man, it's still a budget item on your, you know, monthly list. There's just like a lot of work. The bigger the house, the more work has to be done. Well, God's bandwidth and capacities are infinitely bigger than any millionaire's. Amen? Amen. All right. So the whole New Jerusalem, 1,400 miles, 12 foundations, color, glory, splendor being brought into it. The whole thing. Jesus just kind of cute. He's like, my Father's house. You know, his house. How big is it? Oh, it's quite large. John, you're going to really not know what you're asking for there. Here in a minute when I give you the revelation, you see this house, you're going to like kind of be like a dead man for a couple weeks. You're not going to be much use to anybody. It's a forced fast. You're not getting up off the ground, bro. He just calls it my Father's house. He says, in my Father's house, there are many rooms, places, rooms in a house for family members to live. That's the picture. There is a really big house with rooms that are set aside. And Jesus says, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go prepare a place for you and you and you. And don't forget, I'm a carpenter and I'm really good at what I do. And don't forget, I know you really well. Remember, I live in your guts. So I know you better than you know yourself. I go to prepare a place for you. Not I go to prepare places so that everybody can have, you know, a dorm room. And all the dorm rooms are the same. White walls, bed, you know, little, you know, couch, and mini desk. No, I go as a carpenter back to my Father's house. We've got 2,000 years worth of time here between when Jesus said these words and where we're at right now in the timeline. He says, I go to prepare a place for you. He's got unbelievable resources. He's got carpentry and architecture in his mind. He's got unbelievable number of people and angels that he can utilize to do this work. He says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. It's not just you can have that room and you can have that room. And if you guys want to switch, it doesn't matter. They're the same. I go to prepare a place for you, a home for you. I think we're going to be blown away when we not only move into the city, but we move into our uniquely designed home. What does that look like when we are invited into our home and we come in and it's like Chip and Joanne have been there and they did all the work for us and they got this place ready, but they knew all what was in our heart. They have this, is Jesus has set this thing up perfectly. There's things about the room that just scream you. I go to prepare a place. This is really cool. This is worth meditating on and thanking him for ahead of time. Maybe even putting in a request or two. He's going to prepare a place for you. Guys, that's awesome. I want to touch on the economy of heaven, and this is probably all we'll have time for today. A fully functioning economy. You can't have a society that's operating without an economy. The city of heaven operates with an economy. I just want to give you some of how we know that. Matthew 6, 19 through 20. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Don't make your life about the accumulation of your possessions in this age. But do absolutely make your life about accumulating possessions for the next age. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Matthew 19:21, Jesus answered, if you want to be perfect, go sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Why would you want treasure in heaven why would Jesus advertise this as a big deal if it doesn't matter? If it's of very little consequence. Somebody, you walk into somebody's room and they've got a pile of treasure this high. You're like, that's pretty cool. You walk into your other friend's room and they got a pile of treasure this high. And then the both of them are talking. And it's like, it really doesn't matter because up here treasure means absolutely nothing. So you've got a smaller pile of treasure than I do. Who cares? It doesn't matter. Everything's equal and the same. That's not true. It does matter. Jesus is advertising. He's actually making the direct correlation. Don't be rich in this age. Use your riches in this age to invest in your riches in the next age, because your riches in the next age do matter. They matter just like they matter on this earth and in this age, just like finances matter here and economy matters here and all that stuff. He says you actually can impact your place in the economic structure of the age to come. Your treasure in heaven matters because it's currency. It's in some level of economic relationship. The treasures that you have in the age to come absolutely will impact your status, your quality of life. Just like, you know, if you've only got a dollar, you can buy the cheap taco. If you got a $5, you can buy the fuzzy taco. Okay, it's real simple. You get a good taco or a bad taco, depending on how many dollars this is you got. Jesus is saying, I implore you, save up for the age to come. You will be so glad. You will be as shocked by what those dollars do for you in the age to come as you are by the description of the New Jerusalem in Revelation chapter 21. When you read it and you go, this is a crazy city that is operating according to some very different principles than what I'm used to. He says, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. This is Jesus who's been there. He's telling us how it works. He's given us the cheat code to life. Remember, you're going to live forever somewhere. You're going to live here for a minute. You're dead in a minute. I hate to tell you, you ain't got much time left. Days, weeks, months, or decades, it's not that much time, and you're no longer here in this current state, but you will live forever, and you will either have treasures in heaven or you won't. And Jesus said, oh, I like you guys so much. I want you to have treasures forever, because those treasures equal opportunity for economic engagement in the age to come. Wow. Jesus, thanks. Thanks for doing me a solid. Look at Luke chapter 12, 33. Now this is, I don't understand this. This is a mystery. This is how it is. This is Jesus describing the economy of heaven. And I don't know how it all works, but look what it says. Luke 12, 33. Sell your possessions, give to the poor, provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted. Oh, this is great. The credit card with no limit. You never have to pay it back. I don't know how this works out, but here's what he says. The treasures that you store up for yourselves in the age to come, they're treasures. They have value. They have operational, you know, capacity in the economy. Otherwise, why have them? Why not everybody just get one treasure chip? And the one treasure chip just works the same. You all do whatever you need to do. Why? Because it's going to matter. But then he also says, but whatever you have doesn't get exhausted when you spend it. So whatever it is you wind up amassing, it's inexhaustible. So that in the age to come, when you're in the city, in your house that was designed by Jesus for you, and you're buying things, and you're doing things, you're using that currency, and boom, it appears right back in your bank account. It's inexhaustible. This is so cool. I cannot wait. I am going on a spree, man. I have been living frugal since I found these verses back in, you know, whatever, 2000 or 99. Man, when I'm there, I'm going to test this inexhaustible thing. Week one. I am going everywhere. I'm buying everything. I'm going to do it. Whatever I can buy, I'm buying it. And then I'm going to go back the next day and buy it again because I can. Inexhaustible. Look at this. 1 Timothy 6, 18 through 19. This is an interesting term. We were talking about foundations a minute ago, and in our language, that term foundation, it can mean a number of different things. In the concept a minute ago, when we were talking about New Jerusalem and the 12 foundations, it's talking about the floor. But it also means starting point. The foundation, the starting point, the very, you know, beginning. And that's where we find here, when Paul is talking to Timothy, here in 1 Timothy chapter 6, he says this. Command them to do good. It's talking about rich people, which, by the way, rich people is a very interesting point of comparison, because the majority of the earth, every single one of you in here, is loaded. Loaded. So don't look at your neighbor and go, well, they make a little bit more than me. Look at the poor of the earth and go, I make a crud load more than them. Okay? Jesus said this, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, be generous and willing to share. And then Paul says, because I'm looking out for your eternal reality, I'm looking out for your economic status in the age to come. He says, in this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming ages. Now, what does that mean? A firm foundation. Let's use it this way. For those of you who've got, you know, any ideas of investment in this age, or you've ever tried to make an investment, whatever you have as an investment, if you've got $1,000, let's say, or $100, whatever it is, and you put it in some sort of investment, that is the foundation of your investment. It's the beginning, not the end. It's the starting point. You put money into whatever sort of an investment, that is the foundation. That is the beginning of which you're hoping to build upon it. Why would Paul say, don't store up for yourselves treasures in heaven is the objective? He says, instead, use your wealth in this age to lay up treasure for yourselves in the age to come, which will be your foundation, starting point, entry point into the economic system of the age to come. Your beginning point, your foundation. Whoa, we could grow richer in the age to come? Absolutely, just like God is gonna. Remember, God's gonna bring the treasures of the earth up. It means he gets richer. God's gonna get richer. You can have a starting foundation in heaven that can look like this, 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 or this, and it's all up to you. This is a crazy economy. There are going to be those in the kingdom age that are called rich. There are going to be those in heaven that are going to be called rich, that God is going to identify as rich people. Here's my hope today. Annie, you can come on up. Worship team. Here's my hope. That we recognize this city that we're talking about moving into, it's real and it operates like a city. It does city stuff, and we're gonna do city stuff in it. That it's a real place and it's incredible, and that there's a real dynamic connection between the way that we live in this age and what our life will be like in the age to come. It has everything to do with obedience, and loving God, and doing his will and serving his purposes and being humble and operating in the fruit of the Spirit and showing preference to others instead of being selfish and making our life about our own life. Listen, I'll just tell you frankly, I am making my life about my own life. I am 100% sold and selfish. I want an incredible life for eternity. And if it means I've got to go low and serve and give away and do all the backwards things of the kingdom for 1 minute, called a few decades of my life, whatever, however many decades I get, it's so worth it. And Jesus motivates us this way, that we would think about our life in the city that we're going to move into and the way that we're going to get to operate there, and we would connect it to the way that we make our decisions now in this age.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.